This episode was recorded in September 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
How are you?
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. Getting prepared now. Meet up with Scotland on Sunday. Got the two Nations League games. And then, obviously, our last game was November. Getting ready for the playoff game against Israel. That's been put back to October now.
Obviously, the two Nations League games coming up. But it's not a shambles, but it's because of the pandemic. But it's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's obviously the Scottish season's underway, but for the Premier League and the Championship boys, that's two games before they even start their league seasons.
Yeah.
So how much do they? We got a meeting tomorrow actually, just to see how much the lads have done, because they might not. Some of them might not be ready for full 90 minutes yet. You know, the clubs are going to be. But it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Clubs are going mad, basically.
Yeah, they will be. They will, and I've sort of been on that side of it as well, where you know, especially after this, then you're getting ready for the start of the season. Then the players are coming with us for 8 days.
So traveling.
Yeah, we've got Czech Republic, second game away. All the everything that goes along with that. You're testing, you're obviously exposed at the airports on the flight coming back. So going to be interesting. Looking forward to it.
What I was going to ask you though is I'm not a great social media person. I have little goes and I put on a while ago, I said, do you know what? The footballers must be absolutely knackered. I mean, I don't care what job you do. If you continually do it and do it and do it, everybody gets fed up. Everybody gets tired. Your levels drop. I mean, Sadio Mane's in 13 months or something non-stop. I'm just looking at the fixture list with the Nations League, European Championship qualifiers, Carabao Cup. I mean, at what point do the players go, do you know, we can't do this anymore? Or
I totally agree with you, physically and mentally. If because of the injuries that I had my last few years of my career, I was almost crawling to the finish line at the end of a season. If I was playing now and I had 3 weeks break, that could have been the end 2 or 3 years before it. Just mentally to then go again with the Euros next summer, and then they'll be straight into it again. Then it'll be the World Cup the following year.
Can tell you, careers will be. There's no question. I mean, I know it's a huge thing in rugby with the intensity. You know, and they're saying that the players just can't physically do it. But I'm sure there will come a point. You know, this season more than any other, I bet there's so many injuries.
There will be. But with the social media and that as well, Rob, it's mentally as well is the constant scrutiny, the microscope, the check it, like the abuse seems. I mean, when I first went on Twitter, the abuse was almost unheard of then.
Mm.
Really, you might get the odd tweet, and as it developed, right at the back end of my career, got a little bit of stick, you know, because we were struggling at West Brom. But now it's just constant, it seems.
Yeah.
It's just abuse. I don't know. The players all got... Most of them to even get there is a strong mentality, but how they deal with some of it now, you know, going out and table next to you, taking pictures of you or trying to trip you up when...
I hesitate to say Harry Maguire, because obviously still it's all... we don't know what's going on. But I did an interview with my great friend Chris Kamara yesterday, and we were laughing, and he said... I said, could you imagine if they had camera phones in your day? I said to him.
And mine.
He was like, well, my career would have been a lot shorter. We were laughing.
Even mine years later, I used to quite enjoy having a chat with, you know, if you're out and about and you end up having it. But now, I think you've got to be so on your guard. because someone's trying to trip you up, someone's recording or filming it, just trying to get a story, and then it's headline news. So you've got to be so, especially the lads at that level now, you've got to be so careful.
Well, the way it's gone, you see, when I was, I've been away for 11 years, but even going back before that, the access to footballers for me as a journalist and a reporter was great.
Yeah.
You know, ring someone up and go, hey, do you fancy doing it? Yeah, I'll do an interview, no problem. But now because players are so guarded, and I mean, most of the stories journalists get are through their social media, isn't it? It's a catch 22.
Yeah, and it's such a, and I get it, but there's very few that tell it how it is as well. You know, back then you could have an honest chat. There might be a little bit that you get off the record and that type of thing. But now, that's, I can imagine that's very rare.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, why I got in touch, you've started a new business, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been something that I've wanted to do for a while. Obviously, with a Scotland role, you've got so much time in between and on your hands, and I just decided to do something a little bit different. Psychology side of it was something that I always used. I did a piece in the press a few weeks ago, sort of opening up a little bit about my own struggles when I played, you know, the mental side of it and the actual lack of enjoyment that I found of being a professional footballer.
Which is amazing.
It is. It's something that you sort of dream about as a kid. I started writing something the other day. I'm thinking about putting something else out there a little bit that, you know, what happens to that kid that, I remember Italy 90, opening ceremony, the balloon got released at the San Siro. I'm running outside my front door in Kingston, seeing if it was blowing up. Just that love of the game. But when it is, something changes, no doubt about it. Something changed a little bit for me when it became, you know, not a business, but results. Obviously, it becomes more of a job. You're thrown in at 17 into that environment of, you know, strong characters, alpha males and all of that. It takes a little bit of the fun, a little bit of the joy away from doing it. And as I progressed later on, I always had issues around self-confidence, bit of belief in my own ability, got the big move to Blackburn and struggled for a while. Played for the Republic, struggled for a while. You know, I always needed a little bit of help. You know, I mentioned Steve Peters and Damien Hughes were a couple of the people I used to see, just to use it to try and get the best out of what I had. Yeah. At the end of the day, I still ended up playing 12 years in the Premier League, 23 caps for Ireland and played in the World Cup. It's still somehow I managed, despite all of that, to go on and have a decent career.
So, at what angle does your company and what you're doing now, or what are you trying to do now for players? And is it players across the board?
To be honest with you, I want it to be quite open, not just players, but coaches, because I find and I have found that the stress and the struggle in coaching is even greater. Because you don't know how long you're going to be in the job. You know, you've got people that are climbing to get to the top. You've got people looking over their shoulder, and it can be quite a cynical world. Not enough people enjoying it. So a lot of the coaches struggle. So coaches, players, ex-players, you know, that transition between when you finish and what you're going to do next. Youth players, just to maybe be a sounding board for them and their parents. My experience is what I've been through and what I've seen, just to maybe guide them. But I've actually just finished the first course in a PFA counselling course, so level 2 in counselling skills. So ultimately, this service, as you go through the levels of it, can be open to, and is open to anyone, because all the stuff I've been through, it's the same in a lot of elite business worlds. You know, any highly stressful industries, it's no different whether it's football or business or whatever you do. It's the same kind of feelings and things like that.
Do you think football? I mean, I spoke to a guy called Paul McVeigh, who's
yeah.
I worked with him on a Euros a couple of years ago, and fascinating. We'd had a fascinating chat, and he was saying, you know, like if he'd have gone into a dressing room when he first went into Spurs and said, look, you know, I'm going to see a sports psychologist, he would have just been. He said a lot of players would have liked to do it, but it was like we can't be seen to be doing that. Do you think footballers in general are more open to something like counselling, more open to using, for example, a sports psychologist?
I think as you get older, definitely as I got older, when I was a young player at Millwall and had my struggles there when I first broke into the team, it took a while to adapt to it and that environment of going from youth team into first team at Millwall. You know, great club when I was a kid, but it's not easy. It's not easy playing there. So that was a struggle. Then definitely I would have been fearful of it. Towards the end of my career, I was very open and honest with anyone that would ask or even suggest it to other players. I didn't really care towards the back end as I got more experienced and felt that it was the right thing for me. I remember Steve Peters done that presentation when I was at Blackburn, because he had helped Matt Janssen, documented in Matt Janssen's book. So Steve came in and done a presentation and kind of blew everyone away, you know. And you're talking about proper, you know, typical hard footballers, if you know what I mean, leaders. But he came in, done this presentation, and I think everyone bought into it, interested by it. And later on down the line, you find out that quite a few players after that had gone to see him. But yeah, I was quite open and honest, but I was always keen to seek help as well when I was struggling. So I had no problem with doing that. That's sometimes the biggest challenge, is actually accepting that something's not right and sort of seeking help with it.
What would Steve Peters, what directly did he help you with, and how did he help you?
Bit of perspective, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what's really important in life is, you know, your family, friends, ultimately kicking a football around, although it is important massively, biggest, greatest game in the world for us, but in perspective, not really. Just as simple as that, really. But he obviously works off of his chimp paradox model, really, that inner voice in your head. He calls it the chimp, that can often be that negative voice that keeps chipping away at you. That's not actually your real, that's not you. That's just that negative side that you need to, he calls it boxing it. So when you're ready to perform, you need to box that chimp, or you can never play or compete at your highest level, whether that's in front of the TV camera, whether it's playing a game, whether it's, you know, being a business leader. That voice, everyone's got it. It's just how much of a pain in the ass is it to you, and whether you can actually shut that voice up when you do need to perform.
What reaction have you had to the business so far? What have people said? Have people begun to approach you?
Yeah, it's been loads of emails. It's obviously a lot of players relating to it. It's quite a good piece that I did in the Irish Independent, it was actually, and that got a good response on Twitter, on LinkedIn. And I think a few players messaged and said, you know, that's exactly how I felt when I've played, or that's the emotions that I've been through. So I've helped a couple of coaches, not really with so far helping around the mental health and well-being. That's been more on practical help for grassroots coaches. Session organisation, planning, getting the best out of their sessions. And that's what I want it to be as well. I see it as a tool that players could use, something away from the club. So it might be a footballer that sends me his clips after a game. Then a few days later, they come round, we chill out, we have a relaxed sit down, go for the clips, and just discuss it open and honestly. That having been at a club as a first team coach, sometimes you don't get the true honesty, because if a player is going to say to a first team coach, do you know what, I'm really struggling out there, I've got no confidence, I keep playing the ball simple, I don't want to give the ball away. I don't want to make a mistake. If you're saying that to a first team coach at a club and you're going into one of your biggest games of the season, that can have a detrimental effect into whether you may be playing the team on a Saturday. So I want it to be that as well. Just something, you know, no, I'm not judging anyone. You come round, we just talk open and honestly, which everything that I did to help myself, I did away from the football club. You know, I'd go and see the club doctor. I remember going to see the club doctor a couple of times and saying that I think I need some help. So, you know, I went to see Steve when I was at West Brom. I saw Damien Hughes. So it was always, I always liked doing it, me personally, away from the club, because you still, like you said earlier, Rob, you got that stigma, maybe a little bit, if there's an office at the training ground, and do you want to walk through that door in to see a psychologist, in to see your well-being officer at the club? Some players won't want to do that at the club. They won't want anyone to see any sign of sort of perceived weakness, really, or an excuse to leave him out of the team or question him. I always think a service away, personally, away from the club, sometimes you get that more open and honest discussion.
Do they come and see you? Do you go and see them?
It's, again, that's for discussion. Obviously, at the minute, it can be, well, it's going to be difficult with everything that's going on. So I've had a couple of Zoom sessions, and it's been good, actually. It's just, it has been about football. You know, one coach in particular has been about helping him develop as a coach. You know, what type of sessions, how to structure sessions, themes of sessions. So, you know, that's been brilliant. I think as it develops, I'd quite like to get involved with, you know, with current players and former players, to, because so many of those experiences that I've been through, I had 10 surgeries. I went straight from playing straight into coaching. You know, I had years at the end of my career when I was thinking this could be my last year. I took that step away from Crystal Palace, which was a big step at the time when I obviously left Roy and Ray, and I was having a difficult time at that point. Lost one of my best, closest friends, and you know, someone that was always there to give me advice. He passed away, and just felt that I needed a break from football to refresh, to get that enjoyment back, to get the buzz back, because it just felt like I wasn't enjoying it anymore. You know, and I needed to just take a step away and just have a breathe, just breathe. And then come back to it, you know, fresher, and actually find out what else I like doing, Rob, to be honest. Because actually, after I left Palace and was trying different, I was actually thinking to myself, what do I enjoy doing? Yeah, I don't really know. Because you've been in it since 16, I never really had, I was one of those players that didn't play golf, didn't gamble, didn't, it was just football. So you come out of that and then it literally is, what do I, you've got to almost find yourself again and find out what you enjoy doing. And this, obviously, this counselling course has been something that I've been interested in, and I found that people on the course and the way it was done really enjoyed it. So I've obviously decided to take it to the next stage.
How do people get in touch with you?
On the website, so there's obviously a contact box on the website, stephenreedcoaching.com, and we've also got all the issues and the different groups that I feel that I could help. But again, this is free to anyone. It might be someone that is just in a, you know, high profile, high stress job, that I've had the same experiences in just a different industry. And you know, none of us have got all the answers. Sometimes it's nice to get that person's perspective and just share your own experiences. And you know what? Sometimes it might be a player just wanting to talk about struggles or being a footballer, and that's all. Yeah. Just vent their struggles, their issues. Just someone to listen that's been there as well, that you can relate to. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's just offloading a load of that.
Yeah.
Because I've had counselling in the past. You know, I've never been embarrassed by it. You know, just someone to kind of, those emotions have got to go somewhere. Otherwise, it builds.
Listen,
builds.
I'm, I hear you big time. I mean, I've become quite friendly with, well, very friendly with Sam Allardyce down the years.
Yeah.
Who's one of, I say one of the first, but you know, when he was at Tampa Bay Rowdies, or when he first, you know, going back to the '70s when they had all the psychologists and whatever. He says we've only explored 1% of the mind. Is his view, you know, and the two ways. If you are going to improve performance, it's probably looking at the mind as much as anything, which is arguably the one thing that separates the good from the absolute genius, isn't it? That's, I don't know, mental strength, whatever. And going back to me, Mom, she always used to say, do you know what? It's good to talk.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the difference between being confident and having no confidence on the pitch is incredible. When you're confident, you want the ball in any situation, you've got two or three players, but give me the ball. When you're not confident, you can find yourself hiding a little bit, not quite, oh, I want it, but I don't really want it. You find yourself keeping it safe. You're playing backwards all the time or sideways. You're not trying to find that killer pass or be creative. I've had moments where you just, even towards the back end with my injuries, it was just about getting through the game a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after 5-6 knee surgeries, you're going into games with a swollen knee. You're thinking, half your mind's not even thinking about the performance. It's actually thinking, just get through the game, don't get in. And that's not a good place to be. You know, in hindsight a little bit, I sometimes think I maybe should have had a break when I finished playing, but at the same time, I had some great opportunities to go straight into it.
So, well, but talking to you now, I mean, you're coaching with Scotland, obviously. You're highly regarded as a coach. You've accumulated experience. But then I see you like linked with Southend as a manager and Bolton as a manager. Would you want to be a manager?
I'm not ruling it out. There's been a couple of opportunities that have kind of come over the last few months. You know, I've had an interview at a club, the experience was great, and that was again one of those areas where you're performing under pressure. Mm. When you're getting an interview, when you're presenting yourself and your PowerPoint, that's when you've got to perform. Somehow, I don't know whether it's because I've been in it so long and the mindset of that kind of high performance, you just kind of somehow find a way to switch a button and do it. Same, I've had meetings where you're prepared, but you know, a few butterflies. Is it going to go well? But somehow, like yourself, Rob, with TV, with hosting dinners or whatever, it's good to have those nerves. And somehow, you do flick the switch. Yeah, we'll see. This role at the minute, really enjoying. It's intense when you're together. You have got those breaks in between, which, you know what? It is giving me those opportunities to explore different things and to get involved in different things, which I'm enjoying. Maybe starting a little role at a school close to me, a big private school, doing a bit of coaching a couple of afternoons a week. And I'm actually quite excited by a different little bits of variety instead of in at a club and that's it from May June all the way through till May. I'm quite enjoying being able to do things off the cuff as well. You know, go and watch Liverpool play in Atletico Madrid and go and to the Champions League final and go and see friends that you've not seen in a while and actually be present in it. Because I found, especially when I was coaching and playing, you go and meet people and a couple of times friends have said to me, when we've been out, you know, you're okay. You don't seem to be, you know, don't seem to be with us tonight because I'm probably thinking about a meeting I've got to take the next morning or a session that we've got to do the next morning. You know, now I find myself more present and enjoying family, enjoying friends and doing different things.
Would you, I've got to be honest, who was I speaking of? Chris Coleman I spoke to the other day and he's just come back from China and it lasted so long. But I said, what was it like? He said it was fantastic. He said it was absolutely fantastic. He said the kids, The kids can now speak a bit of Chinese, a bit of Mandarin. He said, I want to go abroad. And from my perspective, I was away for 11 years. And yeah. You know, for better or for best thing, I just wonder from your point of view, whether abroad, a travel might be an option that, you know, there's no question it does broaden the mind.
Yeah, I've always had that in my mind, because I do love travelling about and visiting different places, and you know, I've got a soft spot for Ibiza. You know, I just love it over there. It has got a calmness to
it. They've got bubbles over there.
They have actually. They're actually doing all right. They have. They're in. I think they're in around the third tier actually.
That's the job.
They're doing all right. It has got a calmness to the place, and every opportunity we try and get over there and explore. Yeah. And it's not about what people think it's about. With like, there's so many beautiful, you know, walks and coastlines, and we sort of tend to go up in the north. It's just sort of grounds you a little bit, and every opportunity. Well, obviously this year has been a nightmare. But maybe again next year.
But I also found, I mean, my kids went to an international school with 86 different nationalities. I mean, you know, it was incredible. It was the most incredible experience. You know what I mean? Because you just learn. I mean, we were invited to Iran to go skiing Christmas. I mean, work that one out. You know, the Western view of Iran. Oh, and you know, our friends, fantastic. And
right, yeah, I went to Iran with the Republic, and I was fascinated. Fascinated. The prayer, the culture,
Well, it's the cultures. It's understanding. I think the world would be a happier place if we all got together and understood each other's cultures. Would be a start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that experience you had, this, you know, the kids just wouldn't get that. But no. They could, but 80-odd nationalities in a school, and you're learning, like, that maybe gives them a taste when they're older to explore a bit more and have an acceptance and a knowledge of different cultures and personalities as well. So they've almost got a head start.
Do you know what? It's funny because I do these interviews. I love doing these things because, you know, I'm sitting in my front room here and chatting away to people I've not spoken to in ages. But this interview has gone totally differently from what I was going to. Who's your favorite? You know, I've seen. And the other thing is, when I do them, I end up stalking you because you've got to just. So I'm reading your Twitter feed. I'm reading everything you've ever done. I feel a little bit guilty, to be honest with you. right.
But no, it ends up being. It's good to just. Yeah, it ends up being a bit of a chat.
Absolutely. Without question. What else was I going to ask you? Let me think. Oh, yeah. In my stalking of you, you played under some amazing managers. I was trying to work out whether, you know, you crossed over with Graham Souness at Blackburn.
He signed me.
Were you there? Sam was there. And you've got, you know, even the Billy Bonds going to Millwall. And of course,
Billy,
at Sean Dyche, even. I mean,
yeah, a lot of strong characters there. I played with Dyche at Millwall, and then obviously had a year with him when I played. Physically, by then I was really struggling. But you know, in terms of a culture, an environment of a football club, what he's done up there at Burnley's been incredible. Actually, reminded me of, you know, the dressing room we had at Millwall in a way. Like, such a tight-knit group. And
that's what I was going to ask you, because I've read some amazing articles you've written in the Irish Independent when you were struggling with injury and all that kind of thing. One of the phrases that came, we had such a great dressing room. What does that mean? We had such a great, what is that? Is that a manager? Do managers create that? Do players create that? You see, that fascinates me, that dynamic.
I think it's a mixture. I think obviously you need to get the recruitment right in terms of bringing in the players and doing your due diligence on their characters when they come in. I think Emil is lucky because we had a good group of young players because of the financial restrictions the club had. We got thrown in, but we also had some great senior players. And I think that's part of it, is having that good mix of not senior players killing the younger players and not wanting them to kind of take their place, or you want these senior players to help your younger players. I had that. I remember after training, a couple of senior players would stay behind and do ball striking and a little bit of crossing and finishing, or Daishi might ask me to whip a few crosses in so we could clear them. You know, just they get on socially as well. I think that was important. That's definitely important then. You know, it's probably not so much, players don't seem to do it as much now, but it's always good if socially you get on as a group, you have your maybe a couple of days at the end of the season, and you know, during the season you get together, have dinners, you know, all of that has a massive impact on, again, you're halfway there. If you've got that, you're halfway there to having a successful team. But a lot of the time, I think Daishi drove that at Burnley. Obviously, from when he went in to where they are now, really, that's come from, it's come from him, the environment that he's wanted to create there, and the recruitment as well.
We're talking about sort of confidence and the mind and players. Are there some players who are just so mentally strong that they're not so much they don't need a sports psychologist? Having said that, they might also have issues away from the pitch. But there are players who are just, you know, get and they nothing will perturb them, nothing will change them, I guess.
Yeah, but I think that's probably almost the 1% of the 1% and how they get to the super elite level. I mean, Premier League, playing Premier League football is incredible, but then you've got your super elite up there that can deliver 50, 60 times a season, year after year after year, and keep doing it. Listen, everyone does have their struggles. A lot of players you'll find can perform at their best when, or can still do it if they've got issues away from the football pitch. When they get onto the pitch, that's when that gives them their breathing space to express themselves and to forget about that. But listen, everyone does have their issues, and some can walk away from the game pretty easily and live happily ever after. But I'd say for the majority, it does take some getting used to. And no matter how much money you've got, you still need some kind of plan and a focus and a purpose, because you can't just sit around for years and years and years. Some can, not going to say some can't, but when you get that buzz, I don't know where that goes. You know, that buzz of playing, of training, of going in, having the banter, of, you know, getting to a major tournament, getting to a cup final, and all of a sudden that ends. Where does that all go?
I think it's very difficult. I think there are big parallels between TV and football. I've always said that, in terms of, you know, on a TV show, you know, you come off and I'm wired.
Yeah.
You know, you suddenly.
Exactly.
One of the proudest things I've ever done is the old Soccer Saturday show, which Jeff Stelling makes look ridiculously easy. For 6 hours, it took me about 2 days to calm down.
Yeah, that
I couldn't relate to anybody. I was mentally shattered. And how do you replace that buzz? You're like that. You're right there for hours.
Yeah.
And then you sit down and watch. Do you want to watch Coronation Street? You're like, I can't do anything.
But that's where
it's an actor, isn't it? It's like an actor must do something like that. It's very similar. Yeah. You're performing for an hour and a half. You build up. You've got 50,000 people. How do you watch? You go and sit and have a cup of tea. It's very difficult.
But that's where I think after periods of time of that in those sort of environments, football, TV, sport in general,
performing
leaders, those highs and lows. After years and years and years, it can wear you down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, emotionally, physically. So that's where the difficulties sometimes happen. You know, it's just trying to stay on that. Well, that's the gift, I suppose. That's what we all want, is just to kind of stay, not get too carried away with the highs. Same with the lows.
Right, I've got two more for you. I'd never heard of, I probably pronounced it wrong, nystagmus.
Yeah, it's Harry, my son. He's got
and what you're doing and how people can get, you know, can maybe support that.
He's, he's from birth, he's got this congenital nystagmus, which is a visual impairment. We noticed it when he was born, but they only really picked it up after a few months. But he's doing brilliant. You wouldn't really know there was an issue there unless you did know. He's doing, and he's up to exactly where he should be for, well, he's actually beyond that, and he's playing in his football team, rides a bike. And
really?
Yeah, he's
brilliant.
He's done amazing. So, you know, the charity over the last couple of years, not been involved in it as much. You know, I did some fundraising for a little while, which I need to, you know, probably reboot that again a little bit and get that going. But yeah, we'll have our challenges as we go along, I'm sure. But, you know, he's done and he's fantastic.
That's fantastic.